advisement. And we move to the fifth case this morning, United States versus Garvey.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, my name is Nathaniel Whalen. I'm here on behalf of the defendant appellant Eric Garvey. Your Honors, this Court should reverse Mr. Garvey's convictions because the Court down below plainly erred when it misstated its subpoena power and prevented Garvey from calling a new material impeachment witness to the stand. The Court's error deprived Garvey of the Sixth Amendment constitutional right because, first, it prevented Garvey from calling the witness to the stand. Second, that witness would have provided new, material, non-cumulative impeachment. And third, that impeachment testimony would have, there's a reasonable probability, would have affected the outcome of the trial.
So I have this question for you. There's the Friday afternoon mistake that the judge recognizes. By Monday morning, he had simply failed to recognize that Criminal Rule 17 is different. So the trial starts on Monday, right, the 11th, and I thought that Mr. Garvey wasn't going to put his case on until Wednesday. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So what I don't understand is if Garvey's attorney says on the second day, on Tuesday, he's gotten a voicemail that, I mean, there's some confusion about the dates, but he says he gets this voicemail that Hoopman has been served. Any request from to Judge Conley for a continuance for a day or so while this gets sorted out? Or?
Your Honor, on the Monday, the first day of trial, the judge had already ruled that he would not issue a continuance in relation to a different witness just before this discussion about Mr. Hoopman. There was no request for continuance.
So it just seems to me, since the judge, I would suppose, from the record, felt badly that he had made that mistake on Friday, he probably would have, I mean, don't know if you were trial counsel or whatever, but in general terms, something like this, when the judge had made it very clear that he would permit video conference testimony, he was willing to go quite a ways to facilitate this happening.
In relation to the witness he denied the continuance for, he did permit video conference as well, and so I don't think it's a necessary conclusion that just because he would go out or provide video conference, that means that he would grant a continuance. And I think it's easy to say.
But he did allow video conferencing of the testimony of the other witness.
Correct.
If he delayed the denial.
Correct, Your Honor. He allowed that, and that was the defendant's only witness in this case. Going back to my first point, the court's mistake did effectively prevent Garvey from being able to call the witness to the stand. As Your Honor pointed out, on the Monday before trial, the court stated that it could not subpoena Mr. Hoopman because he was located in Connecticut.
That was the Friday, yeah, that he
yes.
says that. He fixes it on Monday. But why is Hoopman so important? Hoopman, you know, says Hoopman's going to tell them that Wittenback wants $5,000 for the lawnmower. He gets $2,000, but these are two different concepts, right? How much do you want versus how much do you get?
Hoopman would have testified that he actually reached a deal with Wittenbach to pay $5,000. Hoopman, I believe the testimony is Hoopman paid $2,000 and then worked out a way to arrange rent he was going to help contribute with rent for the extra $3,000. And this would have been.
But why, if Wittenbach is getting money, does that mean Garvey isn't up to his ears with this set of transactions anyway? Why does this help so much?
I believe Hoopman's testimony would have contradicted Wittenbach's testimony.
It doesn't seem like a major contradiction to me, though, that it's off by $3,000. Mm-hmm. That's not a big deal.
What it would have demonstrated is that Wittenbach was actually dictating the prices of these sales and facilitating the sales on his own. The government relied heavily on Wittenbach to establish Garvey's role in the conspiracy.
Well, there were lots of hickeys on Wittenbach to begin with.
But there was no impeachment as to Wittenbach's role in the conspiracy, nor was there any impeachment evidence that demonstrated that Wittenbach had previously lied on the stand during his direct, as this Hoopman testimony would have. It would have shown both that Winbach was acting for personal gain, and it would have showed that he was not being truthful when he said that he only asked for $2,000 and only received $2,000.
But why does it help us understand that Garvey wasn't stealing tractors and trucks and snowmobiles and lawnmowers and, you know, that's actually what he's on trial for. So.
Sure. Yes, Your Honor. And what Wittenbach's testimony was vital to do is establish Garvey's role in this alleged conspiracy. The government relied on Wittenbach to say that Garvey was dictating the sales. He was dictating the prices. He was telling Wittenbach how to facilitate these sales, essentially. And what Hootman's testimony would have demonstrated is that, in fact, Wittenbach was, for lack of a better term, pulling some of the strings. It would have cast doubt as to what Garvey's role actually was in the conspiracy.
So I have two other quick points. One of them is that we're on plain error review about this subpoena business, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And secondly, it's really kind of a question. I didn't understand you to be arguing that any of this business about Hoopman affected the sentence. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. Furthermore, Hootman's testimony would have been material to this case because, as I stated, it would have established that Wittenbach was not being truthful when he testified about Garvey's role in the conspiracy and the role of all the co-defendants, or excuse me, not the co-defendants, the alleged co-conspirators in this conspiracy. Furthermore, though the government argues that the case was overwhelming and such testimony would not have had a reasonable likelihood of affecting the outcome of the trial, the government ignores the three acquittals in this case. The government did not present any physical evidence tying Mr. Garvey to this case. In fact, what the government's case essentially relied on was the testimony of convicted felons who were testifying via plea deals. And the jury did acquit on three of the nine counts.
But they did convict on count three, and which is the Ski-Doo snowmobile account, which I don't think Wittenbach had anything to do with.
That's correct. I believe that's correct.
So they did. Wittenbach had no role in convincing the jury about that.
That's correct. But as I said, I believe Wittenbach's testimony was the main way of establishing Garvey's role in this alleged conspiracy. And even though Wittenbach was not essential to that count, the role that Garvey played, as demonstrated by these witnesses, would have affected that count. Furthermore, the jury convicted on the actual Hootman count. They found that Garvey was guilty on that count, and they did not. Hootman's testimony there's a reasonable likelihood Hootman's testimony would have affected that conviction. Your Honors, this court should also reverse Garvey's conviction because the lower court erred when it abused its discretion and denied Garvey's motion for a mistrial after an important governmental witness testified about drug use in contravention of the court's earlier statement that such testimony should be avoided and that the prosecution should lead the witness through his testimony.
It was a quick statement, though, and the court was willing to issue curative instructions, and I thought the strategic decision was made not to. My frivolous thought about this was that this trial was taking place in Madison, right?
That's correct.
I can see where this is going.
Well, it's a comment about sitting down and smoking weed with somebody, so I'm not sure it was quite as dramatic a thought in the jury's mind as you suggest.
I think in a case that had nothing to do with drugs whatsoever, this is the type of testimony that the jury could not reasonably get out of their mind.
But why did they think it was so stigmatizing? I mean, you know, it's not like the witness said, yeah, and I've been buying crack from him or heroin or...
Well, 2 points to that, Your Honor. First, it shows a propensity to violate the law. And secondly, it provides a motive in this case, which there had not previously been. A motive to potentially steal the vehicles.
But it was not about sale of drugs or purchase of drugs. It was just some utilization. It was one witness of 31 witnesses.
That's correct, Your Honor.
They had evidence of 2,000 or 20,000 phone calls, texts, picture messages. So it seems like a little bit in a fairly extended trial.
That's correct, Your Honor. However, of those 31 witnesses, 22 did not even mention Garvey by name. I could narrow it down more and more, but essentially it boiled down to four witnesses. And as to those 20,000 calls, there's no evidence those calls were actually received. There's no evidence of duration. There's no evidence of content. What those calls or what the contact showed is that one phone number called another phone number. And there was also evidence that one of the co-conspirators used Mr. Garvey's phone. And so any call linking to Garvey's number would not necessarily have been linked to him. If Your Honors have no more questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Counsel.
Good afternoon. Peter Yarosh for the United States. Your Honor, I'd first like to start that the government is well aware of Circuit Rule 10A and the subpoena that the government included in the record. And the government understands that they should have requested that that subpoena be included in the record. It was not part of the record. We're now requesting that it be included in the record. As an officer of the court, I just felt we couldn't talk about a subpoena, which was the central issue here, without having that as part of it. This is a plain error review, and it is the defendant's burden to prove that this misstatement by the court affected his substantial rights. Under no circumstances can you believe what the defendant is trying to get the court to believe here and establish a rule that says any time a witness doesn't appear for the defendant, there's error on behalf of the court.
But that's not what he's saying. What he's saying is that if the court hadn't made its mistake on that Friday afternoon, the subpoena could have gone out that day. There would have been the whole weekend, and Mr. Hoopman could have been made available, perhaps by video conference. It wasn't up to Mr. Hoopman once he was commanded to appear in the trial. Now, he might have invoked his Fifth Amendment rights. He might have done other things. But that we wait for that. We don't know what people are going to do.
And you're quite correct, Judge Wood. But what I'm saying is that he wants to avoid the other issues. There is some burden on the defendant to present a correct address, at least, to present a request for this witness.
But he's not complaining about any time prior to the Friday afternoon.
But you also have to remember that Judge Conley stated that the reason the witness wasn't served to begin with, in other words, all the time that had been before, was because he said, hey, look, there's not a correct address.
Correct. And so a lot of things had gone wrong up until July the 8th. But on July the 8th, the court commits a big mistake, you know, by equating Rule 45 with Rule 17. And Mr. Garvey's argument at this point correctly starts then. I mean, there's a lot of blame to be spread around for what happened before, but had the scope of the power been recognized that Friday, it seems that this whole mess wouldn't have come up.
Well, again, and it's a little bit of speculation to say whether the witness would have still been served and whether he would have appeared. And I'm saying that is still a precursor to it.
Why do you think he has the choice to appear or not?
Not the choice to appear, but the choice of whether to actually testify.
Right. No, and I understand that. It's quite clear from the account of the facts. Mr. Hoopman might have thought it much better to keep his mouth shut, but we don't know that, and we usually require people to invoke their Fifth Amendment privilege.
Absolutely. And the only indication we have is the phone call that the defense counsel indicated to the court on that date, said, hey, I got a phone call that says that he had been served with the subpoena, even though the bailiff that afternoon said the subpoena had not yet been served.
Make you wonder what was going on. Mr. Hoopman obviously knew about the subpoena by the time the lawyer makes the phone call, whether or not service has formally been effectuated.
Right, and I think that we could speculate that perhaps he was trying to avoid it. Who knows what was happening when they were trying to serve it and they couldn't serve it in Minnesota or whatever was happening. Somehow he figured it out.
He's in Connecticut by this time.
By this time he is, and it's a fair statement. The question, though, and the reason why I say that he's asking such a bold thing is because he doesn't address. I think he has to at least address those things and saying, look, the defendant did everything he could. We had a ready, willing, able witness. that was going to come in here and provide exculpatory evidence and not just merely one more battering on Mr. Wittenbach, who really, quite frankly, in due deference to the appellate counsel, wasn't that important of a witness. He was a witness. He was a co-conspirator. But Mr. Garvey's role was established by Toby Thomas and Mr. Olson. Those were his henchmen, so to say, who were actually going out there and doing the stealing. Mr. Wittenbach was arranging the middling of some of the sales. And what we have here is not something that says, hey, Mr. Hoopman was going to come in and say Mr. Garvey had nothing to do with it. What we have is this sort of hybrid, not inconsistent statement, not really a contradictory statement, but this question about what the price may have been or what you might be able to infer Mr. Wittenbach was going to get out of this thing. And that, even if it would have been admissible, and I'm not so sure it would have been admissible as simply sort of either contradiction or inconsistent statement, but even if it would have been admissible, would that have affected the outcome of these proceedings? And quite frankly, it wouldn't have. The evidence was overwhelming on Mr. Garvey, and Mr. Wittenbach was just one other person. And again, was impeached in quite a bit. Inconsistent statements, lies to the police over and over and over again. Mr. Garvey was still convicted.
So I think Mr. Whalen's theory is, though, that had Mr. Hoopman testified, it would have shown Mr. Wittenbach to be a much bigger actor in all of this.
Let's assume that's the case. So what? Doesn't mean Mr. Garvey isn't guilty. Just means, oh, Mr. Wittenbach is a bigger actor. And maybe it means that he's not being forthright with the court or he's not being forthright with the jury yet again, telling fibs and minimizing his role. But we had all the other evidence, and it was a considerable amount of evidence. And again, it's not to say that those people didn't mention Mr. Garvey. Of course they did. But they're corroborating what occurred here. They're not going to know it exactly. They're corroborating it. I'd merely
given the order that was in place about the drug use and so forth, that was a pretty dangerous question that was asked.
No, I would beg to differ, Your Honor, and this is why.
Pretty open-ended. What sort of things were you doing with him, knowing that there was drug use in
the background? The witness had been admonished beforehand. That's in the record. And this is just analogous to the Warren Spahn situation, where the pitcher, left-handed pitcher for the Boston Braves, he was going out to pitch in the Cleveland game World Series. He was going to pitch, and Southall came up to him and said, hey, don't throw a fastball. Don't throw a fastball, Warren. Don't throw a fastball.
So
what does Warren do? He threw a fastball, right. And this is exactly the analogous situation. Mr. Thomas.
But you can avoid that if you don't ask questions like, what sort of things were you doing with him?
Well, but the request by the court and the order by the court was, look at, when you get into the price issue about what they're exchanging with the price, which is the only reason the drugs should have come up at all, was when we were dealing with the price exchange. When you get into that, Mr. Droz, make sure you lead. We're not going to have any discussion about the fact that drugs were exchanged.
So you would have asked that very same question the same way again?
Quite frankly, yes. I mean,
think you're going to find yourself getting mistrial.
Well, Your Honor, I'm simply saying there was no reason to think it. The testimony was, we hung out and rode motorcycles together. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, Mr. Thomas adds, oh, and we were smoking marijuana together, too. It was an absolute surprise, as the court recognized, as everybody at that courtroom recognized. It was like, what? Why did you
Judge
say that?
Judge Tinder is suggesting an ounce of prevention, perhaps. I mean, other than sort of blind trust that these witnesses are going to do what you told them.
Oh, absolutely, Your Honor. I mean, that, but I'm just simply saying, Your Honor, is this. With an admonition of a witness, with directing it on a specific area we had, this truly came out of the blue. I'm not saying I would negligently go on asking questions and hoping for mistrials. That wouldn't be the issue. But this was such a different area of concern, and there was absolutely no indication that he was going to suddenly pop out, oh, by the way, we also smoke marijuana together.
What I'm saying is, when you ask such a general question, what sorts of things were you doing with him, knowing the life they were leading, you run a pretty big risk.
Well, and I think the question was sort of like, and how did you come to know him, or how was it that you were together with him, which was supposed to be, we rode motorcycles together. Instead, he adds the smoking marijuana, which is it was almost bizarre in the sense of the syntax of the answer doesn't even fit. But quite frankly, Your Honor, I'm not here advocating that. Boy, you know, the government's going to go forward and try to do this sort of error at all. We were quite aware of the problems with Mr. Thomas. We were not going to ask him any such questions when we dealt with the area where we expected him to be talking about it. And finally, again, it was one isolated statement and just a statement in a huge trial. And the court gave a cautionary instruction telling the jury to disregard it. There's no reason to think that the jury somehow was overwhelmed by this statement, disregarded the jury instruction, and found Mr. Garvey guilty because some mention was made about them smoking marijuana together. It just simply wasn't what the district court evaluated and found to be the case, and found it to be incredible, in fact, that it would have any such finding. There are no other questions. The government asks that the court's order of conviction is sent to be affirmed.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Whalen, how much time? You have no time left. Do you have anything else?
A quick point, if I may, Your Honor.
All right, I'll give you a minute.
Thank you very much. Just to further elaborate that there was more evidence than the one phone call about when the subpoena was actually served. On the Wednesday after trial, on page 3P100, defense counsel represented that he received a call from Mr. Hoopman's attorney that Mr. Hoopman had been served on that day, Wednesday, July 13th, which is consistent with the subpoena that the government offered into the record. Previously, the court had stated on it's in our required short appendix, page 23, that he would not allow Mr. Hoopman to testify after the close of evidence, and the defense attorney did receive this call after the close of evidence. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Well, and I understand you took this by appointment as well. Thank you to you and your firm for your fine representation of your client. Thanks also to the government for their